Good evening. Welcome tonight. We are going to be speaking about the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, as we mentioned last week, was a series of charamim, of enactments, and I'm not using the word takanos, that Rabbeinu Gershom or Hagola, who lived in the turn of the previous millennia, two millennia ago, he lived somewhere in the realm of 960 to 1040. So somewhere around the 1,000 year mark, to their count, around the 1,000-year mark, among the earliest Rishonim, he instituted a number of enactments. A number of them are not going to be relevant for tonight. For example, like reading somebody else's mail, we're not going to talk about that tonight, but he enacted two things that we're going to speak about. One is that a person cannot be megarish a woman, Baal Karcha, even though Midoraisa, the Mishnayos all over again, talk about how a woman can be megarish his wife, Baal Karcha, but Rabbeinu Gershom was metaken, was macharim, that you can't be megayish a woman against her will. She has to agree to take the get. I know right now of cases in our own neighborhood where that's an issue that's under discussion, that issue. Secondly, he made a separate takana. We're going to see if and how they're related, that you're not allowed to have more than one wife. You can't have multiple wives. We saw last week a little bit about the issue of polygamy al pi halacha. We saw that if there's a minhag in a certain place, not to take more than one wives, you can't. And the Torah, of course, says that you can't take additional wives if you can't provide for them. But Rabbeinu Gershom says, I don't care what the whether you have the ability or not. You're not allowed to. That was Rabbeinu Gershom's chayrim, not to take more than one wife. So I want to.
You want to open in there?
I want to sort of set up. If I could just say everybody to make sure you're on mute. Just so my audio works more effectively. So I want to set up one very specific paradigm that's important to keep in mind before we get into the sugya of Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom and see the background and then the Shulchan Aruch about this. Keep in mind there are no gemaras because it's not a halacha that he instituted. If it would be a halacha, then it would have to be based on the halachic process, which would start with a gemara and start with a Mishnah or a gemara and then go to be how it's understood by the Rishonim. But this is not based on a Gemara. It's a Chayim that he instituted because of his wide acceptance among Klal Yisrael. And therefore, there's going to be no Gemara sources for tonight's Shir. We're not going to touch a piece of Gemara. We're only going to mention Rishonim and the Achronim and the Shulchan Aruch in our analysis of Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, let's start with one point. Rabbeinu Gershom, and I know what I'm going to say sounds apologetic, and it really isn't, and you'll see why. People have accused Torah Judaism of being chauvinistic because a man could have multiple wives and a woman can't. A man could give a get against his wife, and a man who decides if they're married, they're not married, and a woman is stuck based on the whim of her husband, that she's stuck in a marriage or she's not stuck in a marriage. And because of that, let me rephrase that, in order to level the playing field, Rabbeinu Gershom, again, in order to level the playing field and make it that men and women are on the same level of, have the same amount of leverage in a divorce, Rabbeinu Gershom said that just like a man can't be megayish a woman, I'm sorry, just like a man, just like a woman can't escape a marriage, a sour marriage on her own, she needs the husband to willingly give her a get, so too a man cannot escape a sour marriage unless his wife, willingly accepts a get. Now, the concept 1,000 years ago of trying to equate the playing field for men and for women, and to make it that it shouldn't be unfair, because on a certain sense, the Torah law is unfair to women, and Rabbeinu Gershom said that himself. And therefore, to level the playing field, it's incredible that 1,000 years ago already, Rabbeinu Gershom is worried about the women's rights. Again, the Rishonim are saying this point. It's not me putting, my own modernistic views into a Rishon, but Rabbeinu Gershom himself has explained that in order to equate the level fields, the playing field, so that men don't have an unfair advantage in marriage or in the ending of a marriage, Rabbeinu Gershom therefore said, "I'm going to make a man unable to get remarried until the woman accepts a get willingly." Now, there's only one way that takana, that a woman has to be willing to accept a get, can have teeth. Because let's say a person wants to get divorced, and his wife doesn't want to accept a get against her will. So he can't divorce her, right? No problem. No problem. He could get around this problem by merely taking himself another wife. A woman doesn't have that option. A woman can't be married to two men. But a man, yes, on one hand, the Rabbeinu Geshem made one takana. The first takana was that you have to, that to help women in the divorce process and to prevent a man from having too much leverage in the divorce process and doing things, you know, just on his own without her willingness, without her interest in going along, he could only give her a get if she's willing to accept it. But that on its own wasn't enough. He had to strengthen that. He had to bolster that takana to make it able to be upheld only by preventing somebody from taking a second wife, because otherwise it doesn't bother somebody. Okay, so I can't divorce my wife. She doesn't want to take a get. Okay, so I'll just take myself another. No. Once Rabbeinu Geshem made the second takana, that strengthens the first takana. By Rabbeinu Geshem saying the second takana, that a husband can't take a second wife, that therefore prevents the husband from being able to just take a second wife if his first wife doesn't want to take a get. And now if you put these two together, what do you have? You have a man and a woman on the exact same playing field when it comes to a divorce. Neither could get divorced against the other one's will. Neither could take a second wife. So now a man and a woman are equated, even though midoraisa they're not. Comes Rabbeinu Geshem and puts on equal footing completely. A man has no better strength, no more leverage in a divorce process or to be divorced or to take any more wives than a woman has. Yes, it's true, this is only a cherem, that's deraisa. But from a practical perspective, a man doesn't have any benefit over a woman. So when people accuse Orthodox Judaism, again, that's chauvinistic, that's against women, you see already 1,000 years ago, Rabbeinu Geshem said, set up a system that's not the case. On a deraisa level, it is. But 1,000 years ago, Rabbeinu Geshem already said, no, everybody's on an equal footing, and that has been the halacha since Rabbeinu Geshem. What we have to talk about tonight is a number of questions. We're not going to be speaking about the question of taking, you know, forcing a get to a woman or making a woman agree to take a get. That's not the topic of tonight's shiur. Tonight we're going to talk about the second takana of Rabbeinu Geshem, which is not taking a second wife if you already have a wife. Now, of course, if you can't afford to take a second wife, then midoraisa you're not allowed to take a second wife. But if a person can't afford it, or let's say for whatever reason, and this happens plenty, you know, with Bati Din all the time, we have a husband and wife are not living together, but he didn't divorce his wife yet for whatever reason, could he marry another wife? And we're going to go through a number of scenarios where and when that could happen. But question number one, what about a situation where the Torah wants you to get married again, to marry another wife? Will you be able to marry another wife there? For example, let's say a guy doesn't have children from his first wife. So there's a mitzvah for him to marry a second wife. Will Rabbeinu Geshem say he's not allowed to marry a second wife? That's question number one. Another situation. Let's say a man is married and he has a wife, and then his brother, Rachmana Litzlan, dies without any children. Now, the living brother has a mitzvah of Yibam. So does Chaim Rabbeinu Geshem prevent the living brother, who has one wife already, prevent that living brother from doing Yibam to take a second wife? After all, there's a mitzvah here. So I just presented two scenarios where there's a mitzvah to take a second wife, and I'm asking you, will Rabbeinu Geshem say, no, you can't do it, even if a makom mitzvah? Another question. Let's say you have a wife who went off the derech, she's no longer religious. So will Rabbeinu Geshem say that she doesn't want to take a get even? She doesn't want to take a get. She doesn't care, she's not religious. She's, I don't know, she married some gypsy... gypsy Muslim, and she's living who knows where in Turkey. And this poor husband, who's, you know, was married to her for a few years, and be kiddushin of iksuva, is he not allowed to get remarried now? That's another question. What about another situation, a fourth situation? What happens if a person is married to a wife, and Rahman al-San, she falls into a coma? And it's an irreversible coma. And the doctors say there's irreversible brain damage, and she's, without getting into the sugya of brain death, she's going to be a vegetable for the rest of her life. She can't take a get. She doesn't have das to take a get. So there's no way that a husband could divorce her, even if he wanted to. There's no one to take the get. So is he all still bound by Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom to not be able to take another wife? So these are all different kinds of applications of questions. Again, they range all just by people who are refusing to take in, or a woman who refuses to take a get, or a woman who can't, or a woman who doesn't care. All these different situations could be asked and have been asked over the years. That's one question, one area of question. Another area is, what is the power of Rabbeinu Gershom to institute this cherem? I told you it's not a halacha. And I told you there's no gemaras because it's not a halachic psak. It's a cherem. That means in the power vested in him by, I don't know, being the Gadol Hador, he set forth that Jews shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't take another wife. So if that's the case, I have a few questions. Was that cherem applicable to the whole world or just to his neighborhood? Where did he live? He lived in France. So just for the Jews of France? Just the Jews of Western Europe? Just the Jews of Europe? What about Australia? And how about this? What about America? There were no Jews in America. There were no Jews in America. I could confidently say there were no Jews in America, not one Jew in America, when Rabbeinu Gershom made his takana. So if he made a cheirim for his own locales, so does Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom apply in America? There were no Jews. So he'll tell us all the Jews here in America all moved from places like where the Takana, where the Chaim did apply. Okay, that's a great question. That's another question we have to ask. What happens if you have a person who's in one area where there was a Chaim? Let me back up. If we assume that the Chaim does not apply universally, it's not a worldwide Chaim, it's only in certain areas, what happens when you have a guy move from one area to another area? And you could ask that question in many ways. What happens if you have a guy who moves from a place where there is a Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom to where there's no Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom? So now he could take a second wife? Or the opposite? What happens if you have a guy who lived in a place, if we assume that there's some place that never had a Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, if he grew up there and he married there 2-3 wives, and now he moves to France, where there definitely is Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom? Is he allowed to keep his wives? Does he have to divorce his wives? So these are a few of the questions that hopefully we will uncover tonight. And what I want to do is try to figure out the answers to them, not just by saying, oh, it's mutter, it's aser, it applies here, it applies there, by understanding the logic of what might have been going through Rabbeinu Gershom's mind when he made this cherem, and thereby we'll be able to figure out some of the answers to these questions. So with that as background, let me please share with you my screen. And we will begin. Okay, so Rabbeinu Gershom lived around the year 1000. It's important to know that there's absolutely no source. There's no sefer that Rabbeinu Gershom writes, and where he writes like, these are my three cherems. We don't have any such source. In fact, he had many takanas. He had many cherems. The most famous three of them are the ones that we talked about, not to read other people's mail, that a woman can't be divorced against her will, and that a man can't take multiple wives. But those are just three of many. He had many, 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 many cherems. I think 15, 20 cherems. Those are just the most famous ones. But we don't have one text that records, from Rabbeinu Gershom, that records his cherems. The earliest one that we do have is a Ra'avan. The Ra'avan, again, a contemporary of Rabbeinu Tam, as you see here, was just a generation or two after Rabbeinu Gershom, within 100 years of Rabbeinu Gershom, probably. You see that the Ravan already writes, V'hani mili, you see, again, he's not telling you, oh, Rabbeinu Gershom made the following takana, but you see from his writing that he's assuming this takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. Let's see what the Ravan's lashon. V'hani mili, whatever he's talking about, not important for us. That applies, B'doros harishonim, Shahaya Adam no se isha lishto. When a man was able to take multiple wives, then a man would ever be an aguna. If something didn't work out with his first wife and he couldn't give her a get, so he would take another wife. But in our generation, a person can't take a second wife in addition to his present wife, etc., etc., etc. All of a sudden, we have something called, you've heard of the word aguna, right? Now we have the word agun. The word agun. Why? There's a case right now. I'm dealing with a case like this right now in our general area where there's a, you know, we always think of the word aguna. An aguna man, some idiot, some evil man is not giving his wife a get. How terrible. What a terrible man that is. He's making his wife an aguna. But now that we have Rabbeinu Gershom, he said that it works the other way also. That if a woman refuses to accept a get from her husband, so she has the power to make him an agun. And that's a power that, I don't know, and then they don't talk about that in the news as much because it's less PC to talk about aguns. It's more PC to talk about agunas. But it's equally, but it's also a problem, and that's the problem that really the Ravon raises. Now, the Ritva, again, we're going to go historically through, you know, through starting with the earliest and going little by little as we go generation after generation, we'll uncover a little bit more of what was assumed to be included in Rabbeinu Gershom's Cherem, not to have multiple wives. So the Ritva already says, quotes, Tosis Kozki, Rabbeinu Gershom Hechrim, that you can't marry Isha Lishto, and we force people. If a person wants to take a second wife, we'll enforce this. Not just that it's on the books, but, you know, do what you want. Wink, wink. No, we're going to enforce it. We're going to be kofa. Aval, look what Ritva adds. Sorry, I wrote it in blue. Aval bi'evama lo hecharim. Meaning what? The Ritva is introducing to us a whole new area of question. What happens, like I mentioned earlier, where you have a man who's married, happily married, and unfortunately, his brother dies without children. So now he has a mitzvah to take another wife. He has a mitzvah to do yibum. But what do you mean? According to the Torah, he has a mitzvah daraisa. According to Rabbeinu Gershom, don't do it. Not good. I'm not going to let you. So did Rabbeinu Gershom institute that you can't marry another woman even in the face of the mitzvah saseh daraisa of doing yibum? So says the Ritva, no. That far Rabbeinu Gershom wouldn't go. He wouldn't go so far as to say that for a mitzvah d'oraisa, I'm going to hold you back. My cherem is going to hold you back from a mitzvah d'oraisa. That far Rabbeinu Gershom's not going to go. Okay, fine. So that's already a big loophole. What you see, at least in this mitzvah of Yibam, is that Rabbeinu Gershom wouldn't say you can't do Yibam. Oh, so maybe that means that Rabbeinu Gershom doesn't want to apply his cherem to all mitzvos? Is he going to say, just like, I'll let you do yibum? Will he also say, I'll let you marry another wife if you don't have any children yet? Right? Let's say a guy didn't fulfill mitzvah of puravu with his wife, and he needs maybe to try maybe another wife, because this wife is infertile. So if he marries another wife, he'll be able to. He doesn't want to divorce the first one. She's nothing wrong with her. She's a wonderful wife, but he has a mitzvah puravu. So instead of divorcing her, why divorce her and let her starve to death, which is, you know, what might have happened when a woman would be on her own years ago, generations ago. So keep her, take good care of her, but, you know, marry another woman to fulfill the mitzvah puravu instead of having to divorce her. Will that also be an option? Rabbeinu Gershom didn't apply his cherem to that mitzvah also, puravu. Okay.
Is it that he wouldn't or couldn't, Rabbi?
By what? By the, what is the cherem?
The cherem in a case of Yevama, because there's a mitzvah of Yibam, maybe he was not able to apply a cherem in face of the mitzvah?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer. Is it that he felt he can't make a cherem against an explicit mitzvah, or that he didn't want to? I don't know. You're really asking what is the mechanics of a cherem? Which I'm not equipped to answer.
Well, there's the famous Taz that he says that you can't.
That's correct.
Stop a mitzvah by doing it's a kanan.
Anyway. Right, that's talking about a din d'rabbanan. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But that's because it's that. Yeah, I didn't want to go into that. That's another topic. But that's correct. That's what I was thinking of. But there's one thing that is fascinating. Is that that's the next line of the Ritva. The Ritva quotes the Rambam, interestingly enough. Not too often do you have that. Once in a while. Kor b'enai, shalohi tir ha-Rambam zalisa nashim harbe bizman hazeh, that he says that the Rambam does allow you. The Rambam doesn't make mention of this Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. The Rambam doesn't, now remember, the Rambam lived after Rabbeinu Gershom. And he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Gershom. He doesn't say you're not allowed to take a second wife. So he says, maybe that's because that the Rambam was living Be'eretz Yishma'elim, where the Yishma'elim, the Arabs, have multiple wives. In fact, till today, in the Arab countries, there are multiple wives. So since the Rambam lived in lands where the minhag was that women did take multiple wives, that's why the Rambam didn't record the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. That means what? That means that Rabbeinu Gershom didn't extend to these Arab lands? Or mean the Rambam just couldn't write it because nobody would listen? We'll have to understand this a little bit more clearly, and that will be in the Rashba that we'll see shortly. So,
wouldn't Rabbeinu Gershom not have any koach over the Sephardic world? I mean, when you make a cherem, or you make a you were limited in terms of your community or the area, in terms of the Ashkenazim, because Hakadosh was in the area of Ashkenazim.
Yeah, well, let's see that. We're going to see that now. The Rashba is going to deal with that question. We're going to see the Rashba now. But part of the fun of this sugya is really the shailas, because the shailas are where you see the exciting situations. The halacha is the halacha, but the shailas are what's interesting in this discussion. So look at the shaila. Oh no, he doesn't ask as a fun, as it's this is not such a racy question. This is just a halachically presented. But so we're going to see some racy questions a little bit later. So the Rashba is asked. Look at the Rashba in Chelek Gimel Simen Tuf Mem Vav Les Chu in Chelek Gimel. Sha'alta, you asked the following question. Second. Takonas Rabbeinu Gershom, Shehecharim, he made a chayim, Shelo Yisa Adam Isha al Ishto. You're not allowed to take a second wife. V'chein Shelo Yigarish as Ishto, you can't divorce your first wife without her permission. My question is, did it apply, does it apply to a woman who, a marriage where the woman didn't, they didn't have children for 10 years? And now he's a mitzvah. The Mishnah says he has to divorce her. So does that mean that Rabbeinu, if you could just solve the problem by just taking another wife and not having to divorce your wife, would that be better? Did Rabbeinu Gershom say you can't have another wife even when you have a mitzvah to have children? That's A. And B, if we do say that he established the chayrem on all circumstances, oh, I'm sorry, do we say that it applies to all places? Or Shem lo tikin el ba'ashkenaz, or it's sarfas. Like Yossi was just saying, maybe he lived in France, and it applied to France and, you know, Germany, extended a little bit. Because of whatever reasons were in that locale. I don't know what the social issues of the time in France and Germany, what the family situations were at that time. Maybe for that, there was a specific reason that prompted him. There was a Weltanschauung and a Zeitgeist of that time period that maybe that prompted him in that area. But that wasn't the Zeitgeist of the Muslim world, and maybe he didn't need to. So says the Rashba, something fascinating. Look at the first four words. Iku takanasa lo yadati. I'm not sure what the Rashba means with those four words. I have two possibilities. Either he means, I didn't see it inside. I never saw the text of Rabbeinu Gershom's takana, so I can't really tell you exactly what his takana is. Or he's saying, I don't really know why he made the cherem. I'm not sure what the Rashba means with these words. Iku takanasa lo yadati. I don't understand his takana. Again, either the parameters or the reasoning. But it seems to me, Ach min hadome, says the Rashba, min hadome means it appears to me, like my dimyon. Harav lo tikin b'chol makom, it doesn't apply everywhere. It's not a worldwide enactment. And I'll prove it to you. Let me repeat. It's not a takana that applies in all circumstances. And I'll prove it to you, because there are some people, there are some diseases that if a woman would have a disease that is transmittable to her husband, some kind of STD, and a terribly dangerous sickness that could be transmittable to her husband. So halach is that they have to get divorced, of course. You can't risk the husband's life, of course. So they have to get divorced. Now ask the Rashba, how could it be where there's a mitzvah that he has to divorce such a woman? And he wants to marry another one because he's a mitzvah to divorce this, and he wants to get married to somebody else. How could it be that, you know, if she doesn't want to take the divorce, he's not going to be able to divorce her? How could it be? So it must be that it doesn't make sense that the Rashi would say you can't divorce your wife no matter what until she agrees. Until she agrees.
B'chol makom here means all circumstances.
Right? Yes. All yes. 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 Like yes. Yes. But he'll talk about the locations in a moment.
Right, just not to get
confused. Okay. And then he says, similarly, if you have a couple that does not have any children, where there's the husband is mechuyev to marry a wife to have with whom to have children. So he says, it can't be that the Rabbeinu Gershon would say, no, you're not allowed to take another wife. It can't be that in a place of a mitzvah, he would say you can't take another wife. It doesn't make sense. That's what I think. He says, but I don't know. That's my impression is that it doesn't make sense. The Rashi would make, that the Rabbeinu Gersh would make a takana in the face of a mitzvah, in a place where you're mechuyev to take another wife, or mechuyev to divorce your wife. Why in the world, if you're mechuyev to divorce her, why do you have to wait for her permission to accept the get? If you're mechuyev, if midoraisa, you could divorce a woman against her will. And Chacham would say, in this situation, you must divorce her. So you have to ask her permission. It just doesn't make sense. Nevertheless, whether I'm right or wrong, concludes the Rashba, what is clear to me is that it is not, this Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom is not a universal takana. Osa takana lo pashta b'chol gvul ha-sener. It has not extended to all of our borders. And even not into the gvulos of Provence, which is smuch le-tzarfas. Even in certain areas of Provence, is southern France, right? He lived in France, and even in Provence, I believe, which is southern France, it hasn't extended. Even there, Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom has not extended. Umaisim b'mkomeinu, and all the, and I'm familiar with many cases, says the Rashi, where I live in, I guess, Spain, right? Yossi, the Rashi lives in Spain? Yossi.
I can say yes.
Yeah, I believe.
I live in Spain.
It's the Talmud of the Ramban.
Yeah. Umaisim b'mkomeinu, and maisim in our own place in Spain, b'talmidim, chachamim, Talmidei chachamim, anshe maisa, shenosu, ish anasheim. There are plenty of people who had multiple wives. At least, I don't know, plenty of people, but there were definitely Talmidei chachamim. V'lo chashuma, no one ever raised the ruckus. So Rashba says it seems clear to me that this Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom is limited to France, maybe Germany, not even southern France, certainly not Spain. That's the conclusion of the Rashba. So the Rashba did is the Rashba really put two wrenches or two weaknesses, not two weaknesses, but he weakened Rabbeinu Gershom's overarching cherem in two ways. Number one, it doesn't apply in all circumstances. And number two, it doesn't apply all over the world. It only applies in those areas that were governed by Rabbeinu Gershom's authority, dominion. Fine. That's among the Rishonim. Now let's take a step, a few hundred years fast forward. And we have the Beis Yosef, quotes the Maharik. And this Maharik is something that is quoted in different sources. We're going to see it in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is going to quote, the Maharik Ramah actually will quote this point. Kosa Maharik, that Rabbeinu Gershom's Takana was only... it had an expiration date. What was the expiration date of Rabbeinu Gershom's Takana? The end of the 5000. The end of the 5th millennia. Right now, we live in the year 5781 from the day of from creation, from Sheshes and Mebreshes. Rabbeinu Gershom lived approximately 1,000 years ago. So he lived around the year 4,700, I don't know, 4,750, something like that. So he made a takana for the end of his millennium. When was the end of until the end of his millennium? That's how the Maharik understands it. Now remember, we don't have a text from which we could, you know, prove the expiration date. You know, if you have a coupon, you look at the coupon, and the coupon says it expires December 31st of 2020. And you know when the coupon is expires. You have a bottle of milk. You can look for the expiration date for the bottle of milk. But if you have a chaim of Rabbeinu Gershom, but you don't have the text of Rabbeinu Gershom, it was an oral tradition that it was in his region and is recorded by the Rishonim post facto after the chaim. So We don't have the details. Says Marik, however he knows, or he has a mesorah about this, or he's convinced, or the nature of how he understands cherems, whatever the reason is, Marik says that it only lasted until the end of the millennia of Rabbeinu Gershom. So if his millennia, if he lived in the fourth millennia, we're now in the fifth millennia. We're in 5,700. So if he lived in the 4,000s, it ended at the year 4,999, which was 782 years ago. And therefore, this Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom does not apply for the past 780 years. And therefore, the Cherem only applied until the year, let's say, 1250 or so. Right? So now, it only applied for 200, 250 years after himself. And for the past 750 years, the second half, the latter part of the Rishonim, and all the period of the Achronim, there's no Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. So life is, you know, there we go. Hey, take as many wives as you want, and divorce your wife without her permission. Do whatever you want. There's no Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. Read somebody else's mail. Go have a blast. Do whatever you want. There's no. We're in the next millennia. Okay, that's one point of the Marik. The Marik says another point that we didn't mention, but another interesting. Let's just adjust the screen a little bit. Furthermore, Beis Yosef quotes the Marik. What about the following situation? Let's say a guy, you remember that in the olden days they did Erusin, and then a year later or a few months later they did Nisuin. Let's say a guy did Erusin. And then, of course, after Erusin, after Kedushin, if they want to break up, they need a get. Something happened, I don't know what happened. Maybe she got sick, maybe she went off the derech, maybe she went nuts, whatever it was. You weren't able to give her a get. She disappeared, whatever happened. And now, okay, you never even, you know, formally you moved in with, you know, she just had Erusin with this woman. And now you can't give her a get. Are you allowed to take a second wife? Is it called a second wife? You never really had a first wife, you only had an Arusa. Do we apply, does Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom apply even to a woman who is only Arusa, that you're not allowed to A, give her a get until she agrees, and B, take another wife if you're still Arusad to the first wife? Okay. So we had a Shaila that was asked to the Trumas Hadeshan. And you can imagine this Shaila happens nowadays also. Now, we know that the Trumas Hadeshan is unique because there is a tradition that says that he asked his own questions. I'm not sure if that's true of the Chelek Beis of the Trumas Hadeshan. This is from Chelek Beis. The way this question is asked, it sounds like it was a real question that was asked to him and not one that he composed on his own. And the Trumas Hadeshan was asked a question like this. A guy was married to a woman and she goes off the derech. And I don't know, she moves in with some gypsy, moves away to Turkey, and you never see her again. So I want to know if I could marry another wife. She doesn't even want to take a get. She's not interested in Judaism anymore. Says the Trumas Hadeshan the following. Habal sheyesh lo isha mumeres. Right? We know what a mumer is. A mumer is a guy who leaves the tradition. Baruch ata Adonai Elohim HaMelech HaOlam she'akol nehiyah b'dvaro. So you have a woman who becomes not religious, and now he wants to marry a nice Jewish girl, a frum girl. But Ostreich, I assume that means Austria, b'chol agapeh, and all of its environs, nogin l'hatzricha l'garsha k'shir tzalisa. We say that in this region, I assume that's the region that under Rabbeinu Gershom, you have to divorce her. But what do you mean? She's not coming to take a deget. Oh, look at this. This is really a little bit of a different topic we don't have to go into now, but once we start, let's just continue it. We'll see this in the Ramah, at the end of the Ramah. What do you do when a woman doesn't want to take a get? She's not religious. She doesn't care. Well, you still have to give her a get, but she doesn't care. Let's think of what's going to happen. What's going to happen if you have a non-religious woman who's married and doesn't care about a get anymore? So what's she doing right now? She's going hanging out with other men. And she's hanging out with other men and doing things that are going to be terrible things, terrible affairs, only because she's married to her first husband. If we could just break this marriage and get her to be a divorcee, then she's not violating Eishes Ish. She's not chayav, Misa every time she's with some other man. So it's in her best interest. She might not appreciate it, but it is in her best interest to become a divorcee. So you know what we could do? Listen to this. Is if she's anyway not religious and anyway not living with her husband, and possibly living with another man, or very well, you know, might live with another man, is it as a chus for her to get a get? Well, normally, we would never say it's a chus for a woman to be divorced, because she's losing out from all the things that her husband could provide her, financially, emotionally, physically. But if anyway they're not living together, and anyway she might be doing terrible things as an Eishes Ish with other men, so it's a tremendous zechus for her to get a get. And in this scenario, we would consider it a zechus in the sense of zachin la'adam shlo b'fanav. And therefore, the husband could write a get to this woman who doesn't want to take it, and someone else could acquire it on her behalf without her ever saying yes. Wow. Why is it as a chus for her that somebody could accept it on her behalf and it becomes hers even though she never said yes? If she's, you know, she's living with some gypsy guy, better that she live with some gypsy guy as a single woman and not as an eishes ish. Mutav lo tizna penuya, lo tizna eishes ish. And then, therefore, based on this idea that you're familiar with of zechia. Somebody could be appointed, you know, somebody could make himself a shliach to accept it on her behalf, even though she doesn't say yes. That's the minhag in Austria, in Österreich. Aval concludes the Chumash Hadashin. There's a different minhag in Rhinus. Yossi, where's Rhinus? Is that along the Rhine River, maybe?
Probably, in Germany.
Okay, let's assume. But in that part, again, Austria and Germany are really right next to each other. But on Rhinus, and that's that part of Germany, lo kapte, if a woman would become not religious and go off the derech and move in with someone else, then in Rhinus, they did allow a man to just marry another wife. He didn't have to divorce his wife, or his the first wife. Aval Rhinus, lo kapte, they weren't machped on giving her a get. V'nosin isha ches b'li gerushin, she'll do whatever she wants. And he's allowed to marry a second wife in such a case. Rabbeinu Gershom didn't make a takana in such a case where the first wife went off the derech and is, you know, living with other men. Okay, that's an important psak that the Rama will actually paskin like when we get there in a few minutes. Okay, now we have a fascinating shaila that is. Actually, we saw this Maharik quote in the Beis Yosef. Remember we saw this Maharik? The Beis Yosef said that maybe the Takana of Rabbeinu Gershom was only till the end of the millennium. So that this, I think it's this Maharik. This Maharik, Maharik is, again, one of the Rishonim who's quoted, Shas Chuz Maharik, quoted by the Beis Yosef. Look at the Shaila. I don't know why. What?
By Yosef Kalon is the Maharik.
Of Yosef Kalon. So he was asked a double question. First of all, this person did not actually get married with Nisun. He just had an Arusa. So he did Erusin or Kiddush, and then there was a few months till the wedding. And lo and behold, unfortunately, his Arusa went crazy. She went off the deep end. She had a breakdown. So now there's a double question. Does Rabbeinu Gershom's Takana, that Chayim, that he can't marry another wife, apply if she was only an Arusa? And secondly, here, the first wife, even if it does apply to an Arusa, but she went nuts, she went crazy. And she's not able to take a get now, let's say. So this is going to be important, possibly, in a situation where a wife, God forbid, falls into a coma, an irreversible coma, for example, where she's, you know, she didn't go crazy, but she's not able to respond. There's some kind of brain damage, God forbid, a wife who suffered a terrible car accident and suffered terrible traumatic brain injury, where she's no longer of sufficient intelligence to receive a get, because we know the Gemara tells us that she has to be Meshachla v'Enachazer. It's different parameters that the Gemara in Gittin tells us about how much das a woman has to be able to accept a get. So says the Maharik. Oh, I have the Shaila here. Oh, here we go. This is the Shaila. Look at his Shaila. Ha'isha shenasan Hashem imadi, at least he recognizes this is the wife that Hashem chose for me. Midas hadin pagaba, something terrible happened to her. V'dolela sichla, v'dayta niska, she went crazy. and she doesn't know the hara, the hater. She's just, I don't know, mentally, she became mentally incompetent. Look how what he writes as his shaila. He quotes this Rashi, which we don't have an archer with Harashba, but he quotes this shaila that was presented to the Rashba. Look how this person writes the shaila to the Rashba. Mori, my dear Rebbe, Hatzila nafshi mishacha, save me. Vaharanium, please teach me, can I marry another woman? And I know what's going to happen. You can only imagine what would happen in a community where a guy would, something happens to his wife and now he wants to get remarried. They're going to talk, they're going to badmouth him. What do you mean? He's married already. How can he do? Stone pi haposchem, please shut the mouths of those who are speaking against me if they're going to make fun of me, saying that because of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, I can't marry another woman. Please, give me a clear psak, give me a heter, so I could shut the mouths of those who are of my detractors. So the Rashba says, similar to the Rashba that we saw earlier, he says, look, I don't think it applies everywhere. And that's A. And also, I don't think it applies in all circumstances, which is what we saw earlier in the Rashba. But look at what the Rashba adds here. Here he gives us a little bit of a hint to a svara of why Rabbeinu Gershom made his takana in the first place. Why did Rabbeinu Gershom make his takana? I don't think his reasoning will apply in your circumstance where your wife went nuts. Shalo asa ela ligdor befrei haparitzim v'holim hama'olim v'neshosem shalo karai. He made Rabbeinu Gershom made his takana as a way to protect women from people who might take advantage of them. What might a man do? A man might mistreat his wife and not want to give her a get. Here, the woman now holds something over him. And she could tell him, sorry buddy, you don't treat me nicely, I'm not going to take a get from you, and you won't be able to get another wife. You won't be able to remarry somebody who you want to be married to. So you better treat me nicely. Oh, so then I understand. That's a reasonable reason for Rabbeinu Gershom to institute such a takana. But in a case that your case where your wife went crazy, where your wife went crazy, that's not the kind of thing that we're trying to protect. And therefore, he gave this fellow a kula, and even the Rashba says kol shekein. Sheshamanu, right? Sheshamanu. I don't know for certain. I didn't see the text of Rabbeinu Gershom's, Chayim written anywhere. But we heard Shelo Gazer El Lizman Sof Elaf HaChamish until the end of the 5000s, again, which was 781 years ago. And therefore, the Rashba was already living in a, or certainly the Ma'arik was already living in a time period after that, right? He was already in the middle, after the mid 1200s, right? The end of the 5000s was 780 years ago, in the early 1200s. So any of the Rishonim, the later Rishonim, like, for example, this Maharik, was already after that hump of, the 5000s. He's already in the 6th millennia. And therefore, it would not apply in that generation. And certainly in a case of this, where his wife went nuts, the Rashba, the Rashba cited by the Maharik, is makel to be able to marry another wife, despite the first woman being unable to receive again. Okay. That's as far as background to the sugya based on the Rishonim who we saw. There's a very excellent entry in the Encyclopedia Talmudis. They do a very good analysis of the history and of the halachas of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. In the 17th volume, they have an entry in the Encyclopedia Talmudis of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom where he collects some fascinating ideas about the history of why Rabbeinu Gershom instituted this Chayrim. And I think if we look at some of the reasons, so far we saw one. We saw the Rashba who said that it's a way of protecting women from husbands who take advantage of them or who mistreat them. Meaning, it gives the woman leverage. If you don't treat me better, I'm not going to take a get from you and you'll be stuck with me. You won't be able to get a wife who you're happy with. So you better treat me nicely. But there are some other reasons. So we saw one, but in Encyclopedia Talmudis, it mentions another one. Some others from the Achronim that I want to share with you. I think this one is the most reasonable. Last week we learned that there is an Issa D'Oraisa of taking additional wives if you can't afford them. You can only imagine that if it was permitted for a person to take a wife, multiple wives, you could only imagine that there would be certain types of personalities, and I don't want to describe the personalities in great depth because it's not going to be any productive for any of us. There's a certain type of person who, even though he can't really afford it, he likes living a certain type of life, a certain type of lifestyle. And he would just take another wife and another wife and another wife. Oh, they can't really afford it. Whatever. We know this type that, people who make weddings who can't afford a wedding, but they have to, do it because that's what everybody else does. So you can't afford it, you do it anyway. So people who can't necessarily afford another wife, I can't afford it, but I'll do it anyway. So that's the problem. Because if a person takes another wife when he can't afford his present wife, his first wife, that's an Issa Doraisa. She roksu savarasa lo yigras, an Issa Doraisa. So maybe Rabbeinu Gershom made a geder, a gzeira. His cherem was really a gzeira to protect the Issa Doraisa, just like you can't, hold a pen because you might write on Shabbos. You can't marry a second wife because somebody who can't afford to might marry a second wife. The way that in Sefer Bira Talmudis writes, Lefisha Choshash, Shema Yirbelo Nashim Velo Yuchal Afarnasan. Especially we live in a place where we live in a time when finances are tough, it's hard to make a living. We don't live in a... I don't know what the economy was like in the time of Rabbeinu Gershom in northern France. Can't imagine they were too wealthy, but people had people were eking out a living, and to say that you could take a multiple wives when you might not be able to afford it, it was a serious question. Not a question in terms of how you're treating women, but maybe there's a totally different point that you might not be fulfilling your mitzvah of providing properly financially for your first wife. Nothing to do with leveraging the playing field, nothing to do with making sure you treat women nicely. I mean, it ends up being that you'll treat women nicely because you're forced to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of sheirach, susav, anasah, lo yigra, that you can't withhold from a woman the financial and emotional needs that that Torah obligates you to have. So that's fascinating. You know why? Because if you take that suggestion, that it's a gzeira, that you might do an iser d'oraisa, then it changes the whole nature of this cherem. You remember I said before that this is not something that I'm not going to bring in any gemara. There are no gemaras about cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom because it's not a halacha. It's a cherem based on some socioeconomic, reason that he felt it appropriate to be mesaken, to institute. But once you suggest a svar like this, that it's a geder or a gzeira, Durabbanan, okay, not Durabbanan from the time of the Chazal, but Durabbanan from the time of Rabbeinu Gershom, he's trying to protect the mitzvah d'oraisa, the lo sase d'oraisa of Sheirach, Susamar, Asala, Yigra. All of a sudden you say, wait a second. Maybe it has certain qualities different than a cherem. Maybe it's more like a din. Maybe there's a difference. Let me raise you the following question to you. Could a woman be mochel? The first wife is mochel. She's mochel. She says, you know what, sweetheart? I know you love me. I know you want to take care of me. But I don't make you happy. I can't bear children. I'm infertile. Take another wife. Like Sarah did. You know what? Sarah said to Avram Avinu, my dear Avram, I know you want to bear children. I can't provide children to you. I'm infertile. Take another wife. Go for it. Take a hugger. So does she have the right? Does he have the right to do that? Is there a concept of mechila? Well, maybe we could say that if it's a cherem that he instituted to protect the women. Well, if the woman herself is mochel, then she's mochel. If on the other hand we say that it's to prevent coming to violate nisa daraisa. So you can't be moch. What's her? She doesn't have any say to be mochel her rights, because she doesn't mind if he takes another wife. There's an issa d'oraisa that the husband might be violating of sheirach susavan asal yigra. She doesn't have the rights to be mochel that. That might be enough nafkamina between the different answers. Another difference might be the following: do we assume that there's a time frame? Do we assume that there's a time expiration, an expiration date on this Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom? if we say the first svara that so there's a social reason, an economic reason, a zeitgeist and a Weltanschauung reason, so you might say, okay, Rabbeinu Gershom said the way we think, the way we look at the world, I don't think you should take another wife. It's not appropriate. It's chauvinistic. But maybe that would have a time limit based on, it's not a geder. It's not. However, if you say this new svara that we're suggesting, that it's a gzera, meaning Rabbeinu Gershom is making gzera, that you shouldn't come to violate the issa deraisa of sheirah, susav, and asala yigra, by taking multiple wives, you might not provide for the first wife properly and violate the issa deraisa of not providing properly. Maybe there's no time expiration. Maybe that should be forever, that concern. Right? That's a reasonable concern forever. Then in order to protect the Torah, just like every gzera d'rabbanan is eternal, this too should be eternal, should not necessarily have an expiration date. Okay? So those are some nafkaminas by what the rationale for the cheirim of Rabbeinu Gershom is. Look at this. This is incredible. A totally different reason. Unrelated to anything we said previously. Maybe there's a totally new reason that, again, this is, I'm quoting from Encyclopedia Talmudis. He culled it from various achronim. I don't know who he got this from. I don't have my notes, that note in front of me. Maybe there's a totally separate reason. What happens if you have a guy living in the Five Towns? He has a wife in the Five Towns. But he goes to, he goes to Chicago quite often on business. So, hey, he has a wife in Chicago. No problem. Wife here, wife there. And okay, so if it's mutter, it's mutter. According to Torah law, it's permitted to have a wife here, wife there. But you know what could happen? They don't necessarily talk to each other. They don't know much about each other. He has a son in New York. And he has a daughter from his wife in Chicago. And, a few years later, he passes on, the mothers pass on. And you have this guy from New York, this girl from Chicago, and they meet up somewhere on the Upper West Side, and a friend introduces them, and they start going out, and they find that they have very similar upbringing, and they have whatever common, whatever it is, and they like each other, they get married. So you just had a brother and a sister who share the same father getting married to each other. And therefore, we're worried that if you allow a husband to marry two wives, he might have, you might generate a situation where you could have unknowingly a sister and a brother marry each other. Isn't that fascinating? I think that's a fascinating, fascinating suggestion. And now a last svara, also very difficult. That's a good question. You'll say it's so uncommon. Why would he make a gzera to prevent something that's so far-fetched? I think the answer is because we find precedent for that concept in Chazal. We find such a gzera in Chazal in certain situations. Maybe that's why.
You don't mean two sisters and two brothers marrying?
That's mutter. You could have two sisters marry two brothers. That's permitted. I know a family where there's two sisters married to two brothers. Oh, but
then Chas v'Shalom, one dies. What about Yibam?
Okay, so that's a mission in Yibam. Yivam says that she won't follow Yibam. No problem.
That's not. Oh, that right.
There's no Isser violated. Just she won't follow Yibam. That's all. And now Rabbo say this is the last svara, which I think is also very different. Nothing to do with the previous ones. What happens? Imagine this. And this, I'll tell you. I'll actually tell you a true story. I don't know, it's not a story. My in-laws, I think I mentioned this last week possibly, my in-laws live in Ramot Bet. And in Ramot Bet, there's an elderly Iraqi family who made Aliyah from Iraq, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And the family consists of an elderly man and his two wives. And my mother-in-law tells me that the two wives sit next to each other in shul. They made Aliyah, and they came with the whole family, and that was their. That's the family unit. It's a wife. It's a husband with two wives, and that's how it was in Iraq, and that's how they came here. I don't know if they're probably in their 80s, and it's been this way for 60 years. They're used to it already. So I want to ask you: imagine that family situation. Could you imagine the competition? I mean, we already see in Tanakh the concern. You see in Halacha. The concern for a tzara. The reason why a co-wife is called a tzara is very obvious because they clearly weren't necessarily pleasant one to another. The co-wife sees the greatest, her greatest enemy and her greatest competition is her co-wife. And there's very good possibility that one will try to be machshil the other. You know, she'll try to fatreif, the other one's frying pans just so she should eat treif, just to get her. She'll try to, set up whatever situations that she could do just to mess up her co-wife. So you want to prevent such situations. So look what he writes over here, the Tzaka B'Tamidus. Maybe the Gzera was the following. Maybe her Rebbe Gershom said, he wanted to be Limnoa Milav or Al Yisurim. If he should be a do, it's known. Sh'shtei Nashim Tzaros, Sonezu Esu. Two co-wives hate each other. There are even halachas that reflect the hate between two co-wives. V'ha'achas chashuda l'kalkal chaverta. One is, potentially, we could assume that they might want to mess up her co-wife. And even if it will end up messing herself up, possibly. So therefore, Rabbeinu Gersh says, we want to prevent these kinds of fighting, more than just fighting, we want to prevent people from violating Yisurim and doing Averis that could be generated in this anger and jealousy mode of co-wives, and therefore, no co-wives. That's what that's what Rabbeinu Gershom wanted to create. So let's finish off, before we get to the Shulchan Aruch, just one of the... We had a few fascinating rationales for Rabbeinu Gershom's takana, and perhaps an afkamina between them, as I mentioned earlier, would be, could the first wife be mochel and allow her husband to take a second wife? So let's look what the Ran himself was asked to Shaila. We are familiar with the Ran, the Chidushi Haran, and the page of the Ran on the Rif. And here you have to realize that he was also a rabbi, and he got Shailas. So the Ran was asked such a Shaila. I don't know if I have the Shaila here, but this is what he writes in his Shailas Tshuvas, the Ran himself. What happens if the first wife gives permission to her husband to take another wife? Avamidas ha'isha, b'zeh yesh ladan. Here we could really ask this gevaldig shayla. De'efshur demidas ha'isha yesh lahatir. Maybe if the first wife is mochel and she allows her husband to take a second wife, it will be mutter. V'lod ela sheyesh ladan shafil heter ein sarach. Maybe. I'm not sure what he means, that there's a heter. Maybe you don't even need a heter. He says something interesting. What's the whole point of the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom? It was a takana that was enacted for her benefit, if that's the reason. If you insisted to, we know from Ksuvah, certain cases where Chacham made a takana to benefit the woman. What happens if the woman says, I don't want, it doesn't benefit. Like, the case where a woman says, we say, Maisi Adayim, go to the husband, and because that will give you, we'll give the woman mizonos. You have a woman who says, I'm a corporate lawyer. I make more than my husband makes. I make $400 an hour. I make $600 an hour. I don't need no mizonos. I don't need $30 a day stipend from my husband. I'd rather me keep my earnings and he could keep his mizonos to himself. So we say, right, that if the takana was for her, so she could say, I don't want this takana. It doesn't benefit me in this case. Well, so too here. Suggests Rav, maybe if the whole Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom is to protect the first wife, you want to protect the first wife. But if she says, I'm happy for him to, it's good for me for him to take another wife, so she has the right to do that, because we're just trying to protect her. And if she's happy to have another wife in the house, maybe that's okay. But says Rav, I'm not really sure. Because maybe, look at this. Shema, maybe this Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom wasn't just to help women and to protect the first wife, in which case she could do mechila. Maybe no. Maybe it was also to improve the situation of the husbands. Men get temperamental, men get emotional, men might want on a whim just to get another wife. Rabbeinu Gershom was wise, though. And he realized that that's not good for every man. Just because a man wants another wife, he wants to marry another younger woman or something like that, Rabbeinu Gershom realized, no, that's not good for you. If you bring another wife just because you want another wife, that's going to prevent, you're not thinking about this right now. You're just thinking of, marrying another woman. But you're not thinking of the fact that it's going to bring tsaros to your house, it's going to bring fighting into your house. So Rabbeinu Gershom set up the system that prevents men from falling weakness to their own emotions and saying, sorry, you can't do this. We will not allow you to do this, even though you want to do it. So therefore, Rabbeinu Geshem was not just helping the woman. Rabbeinu Geshem is helping maybe the man also. And therefore, if the woman would be mochel, maybe that's not sufficient to permit Rabbeinu Chayim and Rabbeinu Geshem. That we can't be matir. So these are the questions that we are raising. We'll have to see, Be'ez Hashem, next week what the halacha is, how the Shulchan Aruch bears out all these shilas that we raised. And we're going to have to talk about what happens when people move from one place to another place. And today we provided all the background we're going to need to be able to go straight to the halacha next week. And after that, we're going to talk about a very important institution of the Heter Mei Rabbanim, when we will apply a Heter Mei Rabbanim, and what is a Heter Mei Rabbanim if a woman, for example, will not take a get, as Rabbeinu Geshem requires her, to, if she doesn't want to take a get. So could a man have some final recourse to be able to remarry anyway, even if his wife is refusing to take a get? That's going to be the sugya of Heter Mei Rabbanim that we'll, Bez Hashem, get to next week. So let me turn off the recording.